You are listening to Speak Up Arkansas with Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. I'm Rebecca Zimmerman. Tomorrow is July 4th, and as we celebrate the anniversary of this nation of immigrants, it is a good time to look at the current issues facing immigrant kids and families in our state and country. From conditions of facilities at the border to kids in Arkansas classrooms, we will be talking with Rosa Velasquez with Arkansas United about immigrants with special focus on immigrant children. Rosa, thank you so much for joining us today. Can you give us a little overview at your work at Arkansas United?
Hi, Rebecca. Thank you so much for having me on. It's so great to be here. Yes, my name is Rosa Velasquez, and I'm the Advocacy and Policy Director for Arkansas United. Arkansas United is an immigrants' rights advocacy and service organization based and founded here in the state of Arkansas. Our primary goal is to close the gap of services within our immigrant communities. We provide host services for both members and our members in our immigrant community here in the state. We provide services like immigration resource centers. We provide legal services for DACA renewals, citizenship applications, and we like to connect the community with the resources that are available in their communities. And so they can have access to all of these services. We do family-based legal services, and we also do adult education because it's incredibly important for our community to be educated once they become a U.S. citizen. We also do advocacy at the federal and local level. We have been successful in the local level here in the state, passing immigrant-friendly laws, and we also do a lot of advocacy at the federal level with laws that would benefit immigrants here in the state of Arkansas. So we have 7 immigrant resource centers here in the state of Arkansas. We are based in Springdale, but we have just opened the resource center in the city of Little Rock, which we are so excited about.
So Arkansas United works with families all around the state, and knowing every family is unique, are there common threads that you hear in their stories?
There are, especially here in the state of Arkansas. We are one of those states that people don't come to when they immigrate to the country. We're usually the second or third stop that they do when immigrants make their home here. So one of the constant things that we hear is the lack of access to services, especially for some of these U.S. citizen children. Their parents are denied Medicaid and even access to education. So that in itself is one of the reoccurring things that we hear from the community. And then a lot of lack of access to language. A lot of our families don't speak English. So the resources that are available to them, even through the schools, they're not able to access them. So that's been one of the problems here that we have in Arkansas, and we as Arkansas United have tried to really bridge those communication gaps between the service organizations and the families themselves.
Yeah, so, you know, speaking of lack of access to services, there's, I think a lot of discussion and fear around that public charge issue. Can you talk a bit about that and the impact it's having?
Absolutely. So that's one of the things that came with this new administration. The thing with that is that a lot of our families do have that access to some of these services, but they're not able to apply for them, or they don't know how to apply for them. Now, this public charge is to us, it's really a ridiculous charge because it's, you know, at the end of the day, these are U.S. citizen children, and the benefits that are owed to them, they're not being given because these benefits are not provided to the family, to the parents that are undocumented or non-citizens. These are services that are for U.S. citizen children. So that's something that we've been fighting at the federal level. We want to make this policy go away because this would help more immigrant families apply before legal status, because at the end of the day, if you do have a public charge, something like this is considered a public charge, then a lot of our families would be disqualified, which is an already arduous process of applying for citizenship, continuing to put more barriers that block this opportunity for our families to apply for legal status. It's really sad, and it's a really long process as well. So adding this continuous roadblock to our families is, at the end of the day, continuing to block the opportunities for them to grow.
And for our listeners who aren't familiar with the issue, it's basically this proposed policy that even if you don't receive services like SNAP or Medicaid, if a family member does, that could disqualify you from applying for or in gaining citizenship for the country, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah. So we're going to get into a lot of policies that have been on the news a lot recently. But before we do, what are some ways, starting off positive, what are some ways that we as a state can be welcoming to immigrants, and especially for families and kids?
So one of the things that we see here in the state is, and this is just, Rebecca, one of the things that we've heard even from the forums that we had this weekend is just the lack of language access to a lot of these city offices. For example, there is a Medicaid office in South Arkansas, a DHS office, that is denying children the opportunity to have Medicaid simply because the parents and the clerk are not communicating, are not able to communicate, and it's just really difficult for them to really apply for the process and have this healthcare for the children. So I think one of the things that we can do better as a community is to provide someone that can translate for the family, because sometimes it's really hard for a family that works full time to even get off for half a day to be able to translate for somebody. So I think that's one of the things that we can start. We can also do better by providing a list of resources for food pantries, for churches that provide clothing and translation services or anything like that. If there's anything like that here in the state, then we would love to know about it so we can connect the community. So I think primarily would be really considering that language access for our families.
Okay. That seems like that should be easy enough, but obviously it's not happening everywhere. So on Thursday there was big news from the Supreme Court. They gave their ruling on the citizenship question for the census. Can you talk more about that and the importance of the census to immigrant communities in Arkansas? And also there was some more news about the census yesterday, continuing saga, if you want to talk about that too.
Yes, absolutely. So this is something that we are really excited about. So last Thursday, the Supreme Court ruled that they were not going to put the question for now on the census. The citizenship question is something that this administration wanted to put on the census because they wanted to know who was undocumented and who was not. But that this question was really problematic for our community because we fear that the community would be targeted. So we were wanting to advocate for the community to be able to go out and be counted because we know how important the census is for the resources that we receive in our community. And we just want to let the community know that these are important resources, so we need to make sure that everyone is counted. But this question, if added to the census, it would have been detrimental to the results, especially our community not wanting to participate because they didn't want to feel targeted. Because one of the things that we heard from our community members is that the government was going to have access to their information, their address, how many people lived in their home, and whether or not they were U.S. citizens. So this is something that we fought very heavily against, and the department yesterday, the Department of Justice told the census to go ahead and start printing that they were not going to pursue with the question. So this was a huge win for our community because the Department of Justice said that they weren't going to include it. And now I think what we can do as a state is really go out and in the community, tell them that they're safe, that their information is safe, and that it will not be shared with anyone. So they really need to go out and be counted. So again, this is a huge win for our community, and we couldn't be more excited that Arkansas United is part of a collective Arkansas Count here in the state of Arkansas, and it is now our primary goal to have as many people, as many immigrants to be counted during the census.
And I'm sorry to interrupt you, Rosa, but I just got a text message from the Arkansas Advocates director with a link to a news article from The Hill with the headline, DOJ reverses, says it's trying to find ways to include the citizenship question on the 2020 census. And that article was just posted at 5:36 p.m. Eastern time. So speaking of you know, ongoing saga, there's, I guess, still not, unfortunately, a final
decision. This is so frustrating.
In light of this really unfortunate breaking news, do you want to say the impact that this could possibly have if we do include this question?
Yeah. Again, going back to what I was saying earlier, this was something that the community was very fearful about because, you know, at the end of the day, the government will have their information and whether or not they're citizens. So it's like putting a target on us when we do participate in the census. So this is really concerning. But I think right now what we really want to put out in the community, especially the immigrant community, is that we really need to be counted. So it really depends on what the administration comes up with, the strategies that we'll move forward with, because, we want to make sure that everyone's counted, but we also want to make sure that everyone feels safe, so, and that our information is safe as well. So, this is really concerning, but I think we need to really move forward to letting the community know that we really need to be counted, but then they can trust us to fall back on if anything were to negatively impact the community.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, important to note just at a very basic level, the census stated purpose is to count each person, not each citizen, and so...
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and especially places like... I'm from a little bitty town in Southwest Arkansas, where our community is, our immigrant community is huge, but our undocumented community is big in numbers as well. So it's important that we're all counted because our school is building a brand new school, and we want to make sure that our resources are there for this new school to be happening, because our kids need it, our students need it. You know, we lost the hospital. So we need to make sure that these resources are available for our community. And this is why it's so important to educate the community and let them know why it's so important to be counted.
Yeah, and we're up with Arkansas Counts Together, and we're always talking about, you know, the state receives almost $10 billion in funds every year based mm-hmm. on census data alone for, like you said, important programs for education, healthcare, things like that. And so... Yeah, this is really unfortunate that this is still being.
It is, Rebecca, and I think one of the statistics said that if Arkansas was undercounted by even 1%, just 1% of the population, we would lose $750 million, and that's too much money to be losing, and for us not to be counted. So that's why I don't agree with a lot of this, what this administration does, because this is detrimental to our community, but they're continuing to provide these roadblocks for us. And you know, $750 million is a lot of money.
And so for people who are listening, what can they do to help ensure that we do have a accurate and fair census count coming up in 2020?
Right. So one of the things that we're doing with the outreach committee with Arkansas Counts is making sure that the community is, one, educated on why the census is important and what resources we would be receiving from the funding that comes to the state of Arkansas. So I think the other thing would be to really let folks know, hey, if you know of somebody that needs help in translation, that needs help in understanding what the census is, just let us know. And we're gonna be speaking to mayors in Arkansas to let them know we're here. Use us as a resource so we can go to the community. And one of the things that we're also doing is helping communities build their own local complete count committees. So with these committees, we want them to be representative of what the community looks like, the demographics. So we need to make sure that we have our Black and Brown folks, that we have our Asian Pacific Islanders that are represented in these committees. So if you don't know what an LCCC is, a local complete count community, let us know, and we'll guide you through the process of building one, so everyone is represented and everyone in your community is reached out to, so they can be part of the census.
Yeah, and we'll talk about it at the end. Rosa will give the contact information for Arkansas United so you can reach out to her. So there have been a lot of disturbing stories in the news recently, and really for the past year, on the family separation policy that's been enacted for a while now. Can you give an update of what's currently happening?
Oh, yes, this is really, really difficult to talk about. I'm sure that you have seen many pictures, especially by some of the Congress members that visited some of these detention centers in the border, southern Texas. It's really concerning. When this administration came into place, one of the things that they one of the policies they moved forward with was the asylum and refugee policy, which this administration stated that in order for you to receive asylum or refugee status, you had to present yourself physically at the United States border in order for you to be booked, and your case would be reviewed. This is what this administration did. But they're not even following their own rules and regulations. And our communities from South America are suffering. They also put in place a policy that said, specifically stating that families were going to be separated. That is so inhumane, and it's disturbing to see some of these pictures. We've read many articles that say that these children are being denied basic services like toothpaste, toothbrushes, and soap. That's dangerous for our children. This is just, it's so sad to talk about, and it just really brings tears to my eyes, because we hear these stories about parents looking for a better life. Can you just imagine how bad their life is, that they're willing to risk everything and not make it to what they think is going to be a better life? It's just really frustrating.
It is difficult to talk about, and I appreciate you talking about it. And the New York Times did an article a few months ago about the conditions in some of the countries where people are coming from, like El Salvador. And in some of these places, the murder rate is higher than in some war zones in the world.
Yeah, so that's why I'm saying, can you imagine just what the situation is back in their home when they're risking it all and putting their children through these situations, because they think that when they arrive here, they're going to be treated better than they were in their home countries. It's just, it's so difficult, and I wish there was something that we could do. But there is, fortunately, there are opportunities for us to volunteer at these centers. We can provide the basic necessities. We can provide toys. It's just some of the groups that I work with have been denied entry to these what we call concentration camps. They've been denied entry. We're providing soap, we're providing toys and books for these children, but just the officers are not letting us in. So I would say to volunteers, try to get some of these articles, to basic articles, to these children, and just continue to fight for better policies.
And what do you think the short term and long term impacts will be for these children?
Long term impact is trauma. This is so concerning, because these children, you're talking about 8 months old to 17 year olds that are going through this incredibly traumatic event in their life. They're being locked up in jails. They're being denied basic services. And I think that PTSD is real. And we really need to look at the broader picture of what we're doing to these children. But the short term is having them reunited with their parents. And I think us as just regular civilians, there's nothing that we can do other than call our Congress members and let them know we are denouncing these policies. We need to make sure that these children are taken care of and reunited with their families. I know that it's incredibly difficult for us to look at these pictures and read these stories and not be able to do anything, but I think at this point in time, it's really important that we all call the White House, we all call our congressmen and let them know, hey, we've got to do something.
And I think that's with a lot of issues that our organization works on and your organization, it can feel overwhelming, and maybe there aren't a lot of options, but just do what you can.
Yeah, that's right. We do. They do need lots of hopes and prayers, but we do need, a quick phone call telling your congressman, hey, this is not okay. I have kids. You have kids. Let's think about that. Let's think about the mothers and fathers that are being separated, that are, they're going through some traumatic events themselves. So we read an article that said that these women were told to drink out of the toilet. How inhumane is that? It's just, I don't know how to fix it other than through policy.
And you've been saying, we need to reunite these families, but the way that they've been separated, sometimes they don't even know who the parents of the children are. Because the way that they separated them, right?
Yeah, and there's a story from a mother that lost her child in detention, and while she was able to get out, and she ended up being removed and deported back to her home country, her child was lost in detention, Rebecca. And what ended up happening was a foster family ended up picking this child up, and the mother was able to finally understand and realize where her child was at, but it was too late because the court system had given the foster parents the adoptive rights, and they ended up changing his name and everything. And this has been happening for a long time. I think that with this administration and social media, this has been amplified even more. But this story is maybe 3-4 years old, so this has been happening for a really long time. It's just that right now it's just being more amplified. But can you imagine losing your child to a government, and then the government giving your child up to somebody else, and now you can't even fight for your child because you have no rights anymore? So what do you do?
Yeah, there aren't any words, but like Rosa said, you can call and you can reach out and say that you're paying attention and this is not okay. Mm-hmm. So there's also been some discussions floating around about doing some sweeps in the interior of the U.S. with deporting people. Where does that stand right now?
Rebecca, could you repeat that?
There's been some recent threats about deporting people who are undocumented in the interior of the country, and I think it's gone back and forth, and it's been off the table and on the table again. I think it's on the table again. Can you give a update about that?
Yes, thank you. So one of the things that this administration took on this year was to, through a tweet, let the community know that he was going to do some massive raids in what I believe is 27 major cities in the country, and this is very concerning as well, because it's really targeting our community. And I don't know if a lot of folks know this, but being in the country as an undocumented immigrant is just a civil offense. It's the same as getting a parking ticket, Rebecca. It is not a felony, and it is not a major crime to be in this country as an undocumented immigrant. So when you're talking about these massive raids, and you're talking about the effects that these raids will do, it's very concerning to the community. Luckily, here in Arkansas, we haven't been a target for raids, but there are stories that we have heard of companies here in the state being raided by ICE, and again, going back to the stories of the children being separated, they're going to school, and when they come home, their parents are not there. So, you know, they have so many questions, and the parents, because they're scared, they don't say, my child is at home, let me go to my child or pick up my child so they can come with me. And that's just for safety and security purposes, that the parents think that the best thing to do is not say that they have children here. And we've heard of places like in Arkadelphia where this happened and many families were separated. We've heard places like Alma that have been targeted by ICE, and our families have been separated. But the problem with this, Rebecca, is that they don't even, when ICE comes into a building or to a workplace, they don't ask every person what their status is. So you're talking about U.S. citizens that are being arrested. You're talking about legal permanent residents that are being arrested. You're talking about people with DACA, which all of these people have legal status and legal presence to be in the country. And that's the problem with these massive raids, because when they come in and start taking you away from your job, they're putting you in a van where then they're booking you for days, and then they're realizing, hey, we made a mistake. These are U.S. citizens. So those policies are incredibly flawed. And I'm a firm believer that policy shouldn't be directed through tweets. It should be directed through action in Congress. But I guess one of the things that we can do as a community is to be mindful about what's happening, but also offer help to these communities. If you hear about any community being targeted, let us know. Let us know, because we have immigration attorneys that are ready to act, and we have access to resources for the community where we can help put these children in safe hands until we're able to get their parents out of detention. But yeah, policies like these are really concerning. And very traumatic as well, because one of the things that we've had to go through here in the state is receiving many calls on our hotline that say, what do I do? Do I leave Arkansas? Do I go back to my home country where I could be killed just to avoid being detained by ICE? And we don't know what to tell them, because we don't want to lose anybody here in the state, but we also don't want anybody to put their family in jeopardy by going back to a country where they don't know. So the trauma is real. The PTSD is real from all of this that is happening locally and at a national level too. We're listening to it every day, and we really don't know what to do.
So I mean, we've talked about, you know, several very negative policies for kids and families at the federal level. But at the state level, there has been some positive changes in the last legislative session, and two really great laws that Arkansas United worked on one for about 14 years before it got passed, which is goes to your point before about, you know, you just got to keep trying, that have to do with young people who've gotten DACA status. Can you talk about those?
Sure. You're playing with my emotions, Rebecca.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm playing with my own, I feel like.
No. Yes, this is great news. These are happy news, and I'm so excited to be talking to people about this because, yes, this is something that we have been working here in Arkansas for 14 years. So we were able to pass the Arkansas State Dream Act during this legislative session. And, oh, my gosh, every time that I say that, I get so giddy in my it's amazing news. So we also were able to pass what we call DACA nurses. So let me talk about the DREAM Act. The DREAM Act is a piece of law that will allow people with deferred action for childhood arrivals or DACA to pay in-state tuition rates. At the moment, anybody that has DACA or or has a visa is not considered a resident of the state, so they have to pay 3 to 4 times as much as their peers that are U.S. citizens would for a credit class. So with this law in place, they will now be able to afford to go to college and take more than one class. So all of our talent is going to stay here, because we were losing students to Texas, to Missouri, to Oklahoma, because all of these states that are surrounding us offer in-state tuition to students with DACA. So now we're going to have a huge influx of students that are applying to the college. And this is not a scholarship. This is just an opportunity to pay what their peers are paying. So the other law that we passed, DACA nurses, is a change in the law for nursing licenses. At the moment, people in Arkansas that are U.S. citizens are the only ones that are able to obtain a license to practice nursing. So again, a lot of our nurses that were here studying here in the state of Arkansas were going to Texas, to Oklahoma, to Louisiana, to Missouri to practice because here they were not able to sit for the nursing exam. So it was really concerning because in 2017, we started receiving hundreds of phone calls from nursing students that said, hey, they're not letting me sit in for my nursing exam, and I'm not able to obtain a nursing license. I've paid hundreds and thousands of dollars for this nursing degree that now I can't use. So we brought this to some of our legislators and said, hey, we need to make sure that this is addressed. So thank goodness and thank all of the support that we received, we were able to pass this. So I actually just received an email from the governor stating that the Arkansas DREAM Act in state tuition equity will go into effect in the fall. So starting school in the fall, you will be able to start paying affordable rates. If you are a DACA student, if you have TPS, or if you're a visa holder in Arkansas, and the DACA nurses law goes into effect July 25th. So, and I believe that it is retroactive, so any student that has the education will now be able to sit for their test, and if they pass it, receive a nursing license. So this is super exciting for us. We've had many schools around the state call us and ask when they can start applying these laws at their institution. So we now have an answer, and we're happy to be that that point of communication for any university and any student that needs more information as well.
And we have a nursing shortage in the state, don't we? I mean, this law is really important just, you know, across the board for people of the state.
Yes, we do, and that was one of the biggest supporters that we had during the legislative session, where tons of hospitals, tons of schools that came and said, hey, we have a major shortage in nurses here in the state, and bilingual nurses. You're talking about being able to communicate with the community and reflecting the demographics of the community. And these nurses are just so talented, and we're going to be able to keep them here. which is, to me, that's what's most exciting.
And you mentioned the governor. Both of these pieces of legislation had bipartisan support and champions.
Yes, and that was something that we know what the legislature looks like in the state of Arkansas. So as I like to say, we are hella red, but we had so much support for these two pieces of legislation that it was just incredible. And a lot of the other states that we work with were asking us, how did you get this done in a state like Arkansas with a governor that's Republican? How did you do it? And we just laugh and we say we had some really good legislators. We had tons of support, and we had God on our side too.
and so maybe continuing playing with your emotions, going back to the federal level, what is the current status of deferred action for childhood arrivals? I mean, the way the policy was structured, it wasn't set permanently correct, and now there's some question about how to do that, and maybe even it could be repealed.
Yes. So this policy came into place in 2012, and not a lot of people know, Rebecca, but I was part of the team that presented this to President Obama when it happened. So I was really excited to come back to Arkansas and get as many people as I could to apply for this. And we did. Every weekend from the day of the announcement to December of 2012, we held legal clinics all over the state of Arkansas, and we helped about 3,000 students apply for this the very first year. So to me, that was something that was incredibly amazing to have, you know, this young girl from Arkansas be part of the change in the United States and here in the state. But when this administration came into place, that was the first thing that they decided that they were going to try to end, which, going back to, this is detrimental to our community because we have so much talent here. And what are they going to do? We have so many people that purchased homes and purchased cars because now they had a social. Now they had an opportunity to drive with a driver's license. But if this goes away, what's going to happen with all of that? You know, we're paying taxes on our Social Security numbers. We're providing for the system. But if this is taken away, then what's going to happen? So right now, the Supreme Court decided that they were going to take this decision on in October of this year. So that, once again, puts us in jeopardy because we don't know what's going to happen. Right now, they're not accepting new applications. They're only accepting DACA renewals. So one of the things that we're telling the community is, look, if your application, if your DACA expires any time in the next 6 months, please, excuse me, please renew. Because at this moment, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know if the program is going to be ended in one day or they're going to allow the permits to expire, or we don't know. And that's what's so frustrating, because there's so much uncertainty and so many people that are going to be directly affected that we don't know. But the positive side of this, Rebecca, is that at the federal level, there's a bill called H.R. 6, which is the Dream and Promise Act, which would help students with DACA and put them on a pathway to citizenship. Because as the law currently states, there is no pathway to citizenship for Dreamers. So with this law, if it were to pass, then people with DACA would be on a roadmap to citizenship, which is so great. And it passed the House, and now it's in the Senate. So one of the things that we're asking the community to do is to call your legislators and say, hey, I firmly believe that we need to give Dreamers a chance at becoming citizens. So call your congressman and tell them to pass H.R. 6. So we still have a long way to go, but we are really, really close. If it passes the Senate, it'll end up at the president's desk, and hopefully he'll sign it. So that gives us a little gleam of hope, even after all of this Supreme Court decision and uncertainty.
And I was just thinking, normally when I think about DACA, I think about young adults. People are 18, 25. Do mm-hmm. children apply for DACA too? Are there?
No.
Okay.
You have to be 16.
Okay.
To apply.
Mm-hmm. Is it?
But like I said earlier, no new applications are being taken. So
yeah.
We have a new generation of undocumented kids that are graduating that are not protected. So when we have a lot of 16 to 18 year olds that are graduating now that are again in limbo because there's no new applications that are being taken for this wonderful program.
And going back to the younger children, what sort of legal status are little ones able to obtain?
There's none, Rebecca. There's none other than family petitions. There's none. And even with mixed status families, the process, you're looking at 15 to 20 years for even a review process. And this is one of the things that I tell a lot of people. There's no pathway to anything for anyone right now. My aunt has been here since 1989. And she was now just able to become a U.S. citizen. Rebecca, that's 30 years that she had to wait to become a U.S. citizen. And that was just because she got lucky that she was able to apply and she was able to get accepted. But after 30 years, and we're not even talking about the kids. This is an adult that came to the country in 1989, and right now, there's just nothing that any of our kids can apply for to obtain a legal status.
Why does it take so long?
Because the immigration system, the immigration laws are so flawed, and they're not written for 2019. These laws were written in 1986, at that point in time, there were only 2 million undocumented immigrants. And not everyone that could apply applied for it. And the system was not written for 11 million people. The policies were not written for 11 million people. So there is this huge backlog of applications that are not even being looked at in time. And I'm telling you that it's ridiculous. The family petition process takes 15 to 20 years to even have your application looked at. And then the process can continue to be 25 to 30 years, as we've seen.
So it was under Reagan that we had our last major immigration policy reform?
That's correct. It was in 1986, the amnesty of 1986.
Well, okay, yep. Well,
that's why we tell people that it's important to create new policies that are dated for 2019, and we need to look at statistics so we can build a better law, so we can write a better law that's going to continue to move with the years and not create this backlog in the next 30 years.
And again, going back to, you know, the youngest New Arkansans, the children in school and even younger, what programs are there in Arkansas for younger immigrant students, like in K through 12 or even in pre-K?
I know that there are some programs that are available for the little ones. I know that HIPPE is one of the programs that doesn't look at status, but does provide an opportunity for students to learn at home before they get to preschool. And then I know that some preschools also offer these educational services to the little ones without asking for status. But there is a huge list, especially a wait list, for some of these kids to be able to obtain these services.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another one, and I love the idea. The Imagination Library also gives children the opportunity to build their own library at home, and they receive a book every month, and this is for children under the age of 5. So those are some of the services that I know that our kids new immigrants here in Arkansas would qualify for.
And are there any, you know, from the different groups that you work with nationally and things, are there any like general best practices for helping immigrant kids?
States like California and New York provide some budgeting for new immigrants. And they do provide services through advocacy organizations, which is something that we could definitely look into here in the state of Arkansas, especially with some of the with the resources and organizations that we have here. But and that's definitely something to look at because it works for them. Their efforts are really targeting the new younger immigrants. So that's definitely something that we can look into.
And you mentioned in healthcare before about a story of a family that you knew because of lack of access to translation services that child was having trouble signing up for health insurance. Are there other issues around insurance or maybe similar important programs for kids that you see any difficulties with, or are there things going really well?
It's definitely not going really well. But yes, there are tons of obstacles for our kids, but mostly targeting the parents because the parents are the ones that are signing all of these documents, but sometimes they don't know what they're signing. So that's why I'm saying that we need to have and be intentional about having interpretation services available for our parents. Healthcare is, if you are an undocumented immigrant, you don't qualify for Medicaid. You don't qualify for our kids or healthcare, any type of health insurance. And even if your parents are able to work and obtain health insurance through their employer, because you don't have a social, then you wouldn't qualify for any type of healthcare. So a lot of this, a lot of our families that are just here or that just arrived, they're having to pay for healthcare services out of pocket, and you're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars if somebody in the family is really sick or has to have a treatment, and you know how expensive that can get really quickly. In the Latinx community, diabetes is predominant. That's one of the biggest diseases in our community, and insulin can be up to $1,000 a vial. So can you imagine the financial strain on a family that doesn't have insurance? And I know that that's not just specific to the immigrant community, but all over as well. So that's something that needs to be done. But again, one of the things that states like California and New York have done is a special budget that allows for undocumented immigrants to apply for a health care that it is very limited, but it's at least a little bit more affordable than having to pay everything out of pocket.
Mm-hmm. And you know, even you're talking about, you know, like emergency services or ongoing services for, you know, chronic health conditions. But for children, there's a lot of just regular checkups that are important to make sure that kids stay healthy and are growing healthy. Mm-hmm. And it seems like that would be incredibly difficult to even if parents wanted to get those services for their children.
That's correct. And I know that a lot of organizations in the state of Arkansas have been very proactive in providing nutrition classes at a free or reduced cost, just so parents can have access to these nutritional services and understanding what foods are better and what food groups they need to stay away from. So there is some activity happening. I just wish that it was broader and that it would help more of our community.
And shifting gears a little bit, you've been in Northwest Arkansas having to advocate on the effects of a not great state policy that passed this session. Can you talk about that?
Sure. So this law, SB 411, now Act 1076, is an anti-sanctuary bill. But it has absolutely nothing to do with anti-sanctuary, and it has everything to do with discrimination and legally, racially profiling the immigrant community. This law was passed on the very last day of the legislative session. It was done in a hurry, and it was done by an organization that is founded on hate and hating against immigrants. So what we're trying to do now is let the community know that we are working to have this law not come into place, but as of now, the law will start on January the 1st of 2020. So the law is so badly written, Rebecca, that it doesn't specify how law enforcement is going to interact with our community, and that's our fear. Because as of the day that it passed, even some of the local municipalities have been interpreting this in a very dangerous way. We've heard cases of people coming into a city hall wanting their water turned on, but because they are brown, they're being asked for their citizenship. Or they're being asked if they're U.S. citizens, or they're being asked for proof. This is very unethical, and it's very dangerous, because are they going to deny basic services like water just because you're not a U.S. citizen? That's inhumane. And we are out in the community trying to let the community know what their rights are, because if we see this at the city hall level, I can't even imagine what it's going to look like when law enforcement tries to identify or interpret this law based on, on their interpretation. What is the basis of them stopping you, other than you just don't look like you're, you know, another person. You look brown or black. And that's one of the things that the governor also wanted to let folks know, that this law would legalize racial profiling. And we still don't understand why he signed it, but this is really concerning for us, because it's so dangerous for our community.
So we have about 5 minutes left. Are there any, we've talked about a bunch of different issues, but is there there any other issues that we didn't talk about that you'd like to highlight?
I do want to talk a little bit more about the Arkansas Dream Act. It doesn't cover everybody, but it is a great start for us. It only covers people that have DACA, people that have CPS, or that have visas. I think at the next legislative session, we want to include undocumented immigrants, because, you know, everybody is part of the state and part of the educational system. So that I just wanted to make that clear, that not everyone will qualify for the State Dream Act. It is a stepping stone for us, but we will work. We will continue to work to include more people. And just be involved, become informed. I know that a lot of these terms are thrown out like equity and diversity, but I heard this last night, and I really believe it. We can't just throw these terms around. We have to act on them. Let's be welcoming. Let's talk about inclusion. Let's talk about intentionally doing things for the community, and really offering that support to our newcomers. You know, people are here looking for a better opportunity. Before we judge, let's listen to their stories. But also let's look at the external factors of why somebody hasn't become a citizen, or why somebody hasn't obtained legal status. So let's be mindful of everyone's story, and be welcoming, because Arkansas is going to work so much better when we work together.
And for people who want to, who may be immigrants or have family members who are immigrants, or people who just want to get involved with Arkansas United's work and help and volunteer, how can people connect with either your services or become volunteers?
So our office is in Springdale. Our main office is in Springdale. And y'all can go to arkansasunited.org Our phone number, our address is on there, but I'll give you our phone number online. It's 479-347-2824, and that's the office number. So if you want to connect, get connected with any services, if you want to volunteer, we have tons of community events that, especially right now through the census and through SB 411 and the Arkansas Dream Act that we're trying to get out in the community. So we need help. We need volunteers. We also have a lot of programs where we can have some more volunteers come into the community. And, so get involved. And we also are doing community programs where we need some more people to get involved. So you can also follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/Arkansas Immigrants. You can follow us on Twitter at ARImmigrants. Just follow us online, and that's where we keep up with most of our events, and we can also be reached immediately through our messenger services through Facebook.
And Rosa, thank you so much for talking with us today. I know some of the topics that we discussed are really difficult and painful, but I appreciate you talking about them and shining light on them. And like you said, even though some of these things are really difficult to read about and hear about, it's important in whatever capacity we can, even if it's just contacting our representatives to work on these issues. And so I thank you for that.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Rebecca. It's truly an honor to be here. And thank you for giving us this platform to explain and educate and also provide a little bit of more knowledge.
And Arkansas Advocates will be back the first Wednesday of next month at 5 p.m. Talking about some other issue that impacts kids and families. So everyone have a happy 4th, and we'll hear from y'all again, or you'll hear from us again next month. Bye.
KABF Community Radio 88.3 Little Rock. We come to you in many languages and cultures, presenting shows and programs in various arts and craft disciplines.
Today on Wings, Asylum Seekers at the U.S. Border.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
We stuffed the gallon water jugs in our backpacks and headed out into terrain that for me was really unexpected.
Deborah Cohen carried water and pairs of socks into the desert along the Mexico-U.S. border. 4 women have been arrested for doing that, but they were trespassing in a federal wildlife refuge. Cohen went with an artist who places crosses where migrants' bodies have been found.
We found ourselves traversing gullies and going up hills and crossing over rocky areas. It was really, really overwhelming, particularly when we stopped and thought about the fact that we were most likely walking in the same footsteps that many of the migrants walked before they met their